Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, it is time. It is 7 o'clock on a Tuesday, and you know what that means during the NFL season. It means it's time to talk to our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Ross, Merry Christmas. How you doing, my friend?
Yeah, Merry Christmas. I'm doing well. How about you guys?
We're doing great. So when we last spoke, you were very skeptical about Bill Belichick coaching at the collegiate level. It has since now happened. He's been hired by North Carolina. Anything that you've seen, like either in the press conferences or the reaction in North Carolina or around football, that have you softening a little bit on your stance that Belichick could be successful at the collegiate level?
Well, no. I mean, I think he has absolutely a chance to be successful. I wouldn't be surprised if he is. Yeah. I think I'm just more surprised that he's doing it. Mm. You know, I don't know anyone. So here's the deal. Yeah. And I don't know how much we talked about this last week. I can't remember. I talk a million places. Yep. But feels like, you know, two of the most important and arguably the two most important things for a college coach are, number one, being able to recruit young people. Right. In particular, high school kids, teenagers, to come to your school and their parents, by the way, and then to be able to convince donors that they should allocate their funds to your program to help with NIL, to help with facilities, all of these things. And, you know, I did the Patriots game over the weekend against the Cardinals. So I've talked to a lot of people. And I've seen Brady's comments. I've seen Edelman's comments. I don't know anyone that can picture Belichick doing either one of those things.
Yeah.
So I just think it's really interesting. And I think we would all love to see a video of it, of him recruiting a high school kid and what that's like, of him talking to a donor and trying to get more money for the program. It's just hard to imagine either one of those things. That said, I do think, you know, his reputation and success certainly would help with some of the parents. You know, I even wonder, like, probably some of the college kids, like the transfer portal kids, but the high school kids, I don't know how much they even remember of when Belichick was winning Super Bowls. I think, you know, that was when they were younger. Schematically, he's fantastic. Game plan standpoint, he's fantastic. But I'd also say, I think as soon as he gets a head coaching job in the NFL, or if he gets offered one, I think he would leave the next day.
Oh,
I give him a lot of credit for doing it, because I thought he only wanted to coach to break Shula's record. So I give him a lot of credit for that. But I still think that that's the primary impetus, is to break the record. And so he likes coaching, and he didn't know if he was going to get a job or not. But I don't know. Like, if someone offers him a job after the season in January, I would not be shocked if he took it. Like, I would not be shocked if he's like, well, sorry, North Carolina, but I'm doing this. I just wouldn't.
Yeah, the buyout goes down to $1 million in June or July of 2025, I think, which is obvious. Like, nobody's going to hire a head coach in June or July of 2025, but that's where it's kind of set up that way. Ross, I'm gonna ask you a difficult question, and it's okay if you don't have an answer for this, but I still want you to at least filibuster around it. What's the realistic ceiling for this Texans offense right now over the next 4 weeks? Like, what could we reasonably hope for, like some sign of menace or threat or something to where the things click for them?
It's a really good question. I was kind of surprised by that on Sunday. You know, I mean, to not be able to run it like that. Okay, I can live with you don't run it well, because the team is selling out to stop the run. In that case, though, you would just have expected the passing game to really be firing, right? To really be firing on all cylinders. So you can't really get Joe going in the run game. Okay. That usually means that happened to the Eagles, by the way. That happened to the Eagles on Sunday. They couldn't get Saquon Barkley going really like they had been, to the extent, because the Steelers, you know, kind of sold out to stop Saquon. They did a pretty good job of it. But then the Eagles absolutely tore him up in the passing game. You know, both Devontae Smith and A.J. Brown had over 100 yards receiving. That's the troubling thing to me, is that the Texans should have somewhat of a pick-your-poison offense, where it's like, okay, you're going to take away this, then we'll be able to do that. Because they've shown that they can do both. They've shown they can throw it. They've shown they can run it. I'll give the Dolphins a lot of credit. You know, the defense came to play, but I don't know. I think it's a really fair question. I think the ceiling is really high because we've seen it. You know, we know it's there with Slowick and Nico Collins and Stroud. We know it's there somewhere. I'm not exactly sure why they haven't shown it or been firing on all cylinders for a while. The good news is, you know, with them clinching the division, there's actually still a decent amount of time to find it. Yeah. Right? I mean, there's three regular season games before they even get to that home playoff game. That's like, it's like football weeks are like dog years. I mean, like, there's a lot of time that they have to try to figure this out and try out some different things next few weeks to try to get it back on track.
Ross Tucker's our Odyssey NFL Insider. Insider calls, of course, brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart, Kroger, or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. So, Ross, as far as this matchup goes for the Texans on Saturday, Patrick Mahomes has a high ankle sprain. They're saying he's week to week. We've seen Patrick Mahomes play with ankle sprains before. How do you think the Chiefs, given where they are in the standings right now, and given that they've got to play a Christmas Day game 4 days later, how do you think they handle the Mahomes thing, and how does that affect your handicap on this game? Is it as simple as if Mahomes plays, the Chiefs win, and if he doesn't, then the Texans win? Give us your thoughts on that.
Well, obviously, nobody really knows what the deal is with Mahomes' ankle. It does feel like, over the years, I feel like we see this every year where he hurts his ankle and then he plays the next game.
Yeah.
You know, the guy's like Gumby. I don't know how he does it. So I do think on some level that I wouldn't be surprised if he's out there. The flip side, though, I don't know. Andy Reid had a lot of success throughout his career with backup quarterbacks. I mean, you go back to Philly with like Coy Detmer, A.J. Feely, Kevin Cobb, Jeff Garcia. I mean, he's won a lot of games, like playoff games, with backup quarterbacks. Wentz has been there for a while. I reference that because they really only need to, like, as long as they just win one of these next two, they still are in a great position to get the bye. So I guess part of me wonders if they would go with Wentz Saturday and Wentz on Christmas with the belief that Wentz can get one of those two wins for them, that they'll win one of those two games. And then after the Christmas game, then you have a full like 11 days or 10, whatever it is, before the last regular season game. And, you know, you can bring Mahomes back for that if you want. You probably will because you're going to probably need the win at that point. And then you earn the bye. I don't know how they're going to play it. You know, the schedule makes it especially interesting with the Saturday-Wednesday. Maybe they just try to heal them up for the Steelers and give Wentz the ball against the Texans and hope Wentz can play well enough to beat the Texans. I think that'd probably be a very competitive game. So it's going to be fascinating. It really, I mean, they won't figure any of that out, I don't think, until Thursday or Friday as they get closer. You know, he won't do anything other than try to heal, and then they'll see where he's at Friday. But there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of possibilities out there.
Well, and we should point out that last game, you know, if they were to start Wentz and they, you know, they don't win either of those, that last game's at Denver, you know, so it's no gimme in that last game if you're trying to, you know, that's a game of guts poker there if you're counting on beating the Broncos in Denver as a way to secure that number one overall seed, too.
So it's a really good point. I think, you know, it's tough to know how bad his ankle is.
Yeah.
I think I'd probably go with Wentz on Saturday and Wednesday.
Yeah.
Give Mahomes a full, you know, what would that be, 3 weeks then? Full 2 weeks. No, 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
Be a full
three weeks.
Yeah, be a full 3 weeks. Math is hard. It'd be a full 3 weeks before the Broncos game.
Yeah.
Because, yes, you want the number one seed, you want the bye, but you really want him to be healthy.
Yes.
I don't know that it's worth having him gimp around these next two games. They've kind of proven that they can win a Super Bowl without having the bye or the number one seed.
Yeah,
Ross, I was happy to see that Greg Cassell had at least broached the topic of C.J. Stroud because you asked him a question about it in your Ross Tucker Football podcast. I've been frustrated this year because it feels like I'm looking outside the city of Houston for opinions on C.J. Stroud, and nobody's really talking about him. I've sent out messages to a lot of the film nerds like Robert Mays and everything. I'm like, can you please do a deep dive into Bobby Slowick and C.J. Stroud? And this is my sense. I feel like the fact that Mahomes is so mediocre in so many ways this year, and because really, other than like Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, I don't know who the good quarterbacks in the NFL are right now. Is there just a, kind of like an uncertainty and an unsettled feeling about quarterback play in the NFL right now?
Well, so Josh Allen is just outrageous, and he's clearly the MVP in my mind. And Lamar Jackson is playing an MVP caliber level as well. What's interesting is like, you know, Sam Darnold has played at a really high level this year.
Yeah.
The last few weeks, Matthew Stafford and
Baker Mayfield
have been lighting it up. Jared Goff has been fantastic every game all year, except for the game in Houston. So there are quarterbacks that are playing at a high level. You know, I thought,
but they're not the usual suspects necessarily. And I think
you're right. Some of them are not. And for people that didn't see it, it's on social media at Ross Tucker Pod, but Greg basically just talked about C.J. Stroud having to get better, you know, when he's not in clean pockets. And I get that, and I appreciate what Greg's saying. I guess the only thing I would say is, like, it's not like the pockets were all clean last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I'm not exactly sure what's happened there. Here's what I would say, okay? I think this is fascinating. Last year, I thought C.J. Stroud was like a top five quarterback in the league. And I thought Bryce Young was bottom five, probably the worst, okay? If you look at them, now Bryce Young did not have a good game against the Cowboys Sunday. But if you look at Bryce Young the month before that and compare it to Stroud that month, I don't know, man. I mean, you know, my whole thing when I go on in Charlotte is like, yeah, you guys clearly picked the wrong guy. There's absolutely no chance Bryce Young would ever – like, I don't think Bryce Young will ever get to as well as C.J. Stroud's playing this year. This was last year, let alone, you know, as Stroud continues to improve. Well, pretty clearly, I think Stroud's not playing as well as he did last year, and Bryce Young's playing much better. So I don't know, you know, I don't know if Bryce Young's the 22nd best quarterback right now and Stroud's the 16th. I guess I would just say – if you just took the last month as the example, it's actually a lot closer than I thought it would be. I'm very, very surprised.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think, you know, to that point, Ross, I mean, it's a very fair point that the gap narrowed at least for, you know, temporarily for the last month. You always, when we talk about stuff like this, eventually you're like, what do you guys think of it? What's the feeling on the ground there in Houston? I'm just going to volunteer it for you on this. I don't think Texan fans overall, generally speaking, are blaming C.J. Stroud for any sort of regression for him this year. I think the blame, by and large, is going to Bobby Slowick in the offensive line. I don't think people are nervous that Stroud's not the guy for the next 10 years. You know what I mean?
No, I think he is the guy for the next 10 years. But I also think if they're not seeing that he's not playing as well, that's on them.
Mm-hmm.
So
right.
What happens is franchise quarterbacks are like a religion, and once people once someone has a rookie year like Stroud, it creates so much hope and belief and positivity in the fan base that there's typically like a large segment of a fan base, they don't want to hear anyone say anything negative about that guy ever again. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, yeah.
they get their defense mechanisms up, and it's like, don't attack C.J. Stroud. He's awesome. We saw that last year. Anything that's happening this year is not his fault. You can't blame him for anything. That's wrong. Like that is wrong. You can say he's a really good player, had an awesome rookie year. He's clearly the Texans franchise quarterback, while also saying he's not playing as well, and he's missing some throws that he didn't miss last year. It's okay to still be very high on him as a player, but acknowledge that there are some flaws in his game. If you want to blame it primarily on the offensive line, that's fine, but it's not 100% on the offensive line. If you want to blame it on Diggs getting hurt or Nico Collins is out, okay, but now Nico Collins has been back. And the offense still isn't clicking as much. You want to blame it on Slowick? Well, then, you know, you got to give Slowick a ton of the credit for what happened last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't have it both ways.
No, that's totally fair. Ross Tucker is our Odyssey NFL insider. Ross, where are you going to be this weekend?
Oh, man. Back-to-back weeks, I got double headers. So, busy time. So, Thursday night, radio, Westwood One, Chargers, Broncos.
Ooh.
Then I will take the red eye to Indianapolis for another AFC South battle, Titans and the Colts,
okay.
Two teams that are pretty much out of it. I guess the Colts still have a mathematical chance.
Yep.
And then next week, I got the Steelers-Chiefs radio on Christmas, and then I will have an NFL game that weekend. Hasn't been announced yet, but it will be by next week, and I can tell you about it.
Ross, I know you got to go, but I just wanted to pass this along to you. We do focus groups here every couple of years with listeners and whatnot. Ross Tucker has been brought up very, very positively.
Graded
by a
very
lot of the focus
high.
Groups.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you, focus group.
Yeah. Focus group liked you, Ross.
The key is you guys picked the right focus groups, and I'm so glad so many of my family members have moved to Houston recently.
That's great. That's great.
You packed the focus group.
Good. Yeah, it's stacked. We had ringers in there.
Yeah.
Yep, yep. Our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. May your game day be delicious. Ross, we will we talk to you next week on Tuesday? It's Christmas Eve.
I can absolutely talk to you guys next week on Tuesday.
Okay, cool. We'll be in.
I don't know what the as long as you guys are in and you're up for it, I'm up for it.
We're up for it, man. We'll talk to you on Tuesday next week, man.
This explains why
there's all
right, thanks, Ross. Merry Christmas.
6'5" Yinzers walking around the building that last week.
That's right. Ross's people.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy two and get three free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit three free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound. Limit two packages. Creamy Hass Avocados, 77 cents each. Limit four items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
So that's interesting. I think his point on CJ was totally fair, as the follow-up to my sort of temperature check.
This is the frustrating part of it, is that, yes, and Greg Cassell made the point that, okay, dealing with the muddy pockets, keeping your eyes downfield, all of that, he can improve in that regard. The problem is it's really, really hard to separate the poor pass protection and the poor run game from the decisions that CJ's making. And you venture into hazardous territory where you really don't want to make excuses for some of the decision-making or sort of some of the lack of timing and rhythm in the offense. You don't want to make excuses for the quarterback too much, but you got to acknowledge and recognize that, man, they've also, because of negative plays, they're in second and long and third and long a lot. Yeah. And CJ can't trust the protection in front of him. So it's just, there's so many different areas you could focus on that just aren't going well. To me, ultimately, and I know I think Clint and I differ in this in some regard. Clint's more positive on Bobby Slowick than I am at this point. I think sometimes people separate play calling and execution too much and put... And they look at the offensive coordinator like, oh, he's the play caller. And if the play's not being executed, oh, that's on the players. No, that's on the offensive coordinator as well. When things aren't being executed crisply, when mental errors are being made, when there's poor communication, when you're having all of these negative plays, when the offensive coordinator or the head coach gets up there and says, well, they got to execute, they execute, they got to execute. And I think these guys feel this way. To me, I hear, yeah, that's on the coaching.
Yes.
You are responsible for the execution. I think sometimes people hear that and they think like, oh, they're blaming the players. I hope not. I hope that's not what Bobby Slowik is doing, because ultimately he's responsible for the execution, and they're not executing well.
No, they're not. No, they're not.
Even when the play calling is good. Great. Okay, good call. Good play call, Bobby. Yeah. But, like, why are the screens being sniffed out immediately by the defense?
Yes.
Because they're not executing poorly. They've got tells. They've got tendencies. And defenses are on to it. And that falls back on the offensive coordinator.
You nailed it. It feels like every team they play has the answers to the test.
The screens are absurd.
They're bad.
It is ridiculous little. So this is an offense that is you got to execute the deception part of it really well. You want to really dupe people. That's how you get the wide open receivers downfield and whatnot. And there's just no deception. People aren't biting on things.
Nope.
Like linebackers, safeties, everybody's just staying at home. They know when it's going to be a screen. They're not worried about the run. And that's why I'm glad they brought it up in the broadcast last week. The Texans have scored on the opening drive for however many consecutive games. Yeah. It's the best streak in the NFL right now. Yeah. That's great compared to what it used to be when the Texans couldn't score on the opening drive.
Yes.
Back in the Bill O'Brien days.
Yes.
But it's almost like, okay, the best version of the Texans offense you're going to see is in that first drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's all downhill after that.
Yeah. That is the biggest explanation for the dynamic that's in place, which is this is what I thought it would look like last season in CJ's rookie year and Bobby Slowik's first year as a play caller, and to an extent, D'Amico Ryan's first year as a head coach. You got a lot of guys doing their jobs for the first time at an NFL level. And that this season would be the one that looked like last season.
Yeah.
I would have thought they would have been flipped.
Yeah.
And that's what's so strange about this. Everybody seeing the tells and the predictability of what you're doing has got to be the main explanation for that. It's mostly the same guys
out
there.
From situational tendencies. But the Texans have their analytics people. That should be – they know what their tendencies are, and then they try to exploit them. It's just that some of the things they do – I give Bobby Slowik credit for the whiteboard element of it, for drawing it up. They've done the package where Joe Mixon comes across like in a jet motion, and sometimes he gets the ball and sometimes he doesn't.
Yeah.
And it's worked, but then they'll try to set a play up based on that, and nobody's biting on it.
Right.
The sack, when Ali Gay got that sack in the Tennessee game. So they ran that little jet motion with Joe Mixon. Ali Gay ignored it 100%. So that could be one of two things. One could be Ali Gay knew that it wasn't going to be that Joe Mixon. Or B, Ali Gay as a young player might have been completely oblivious to it. And that's part of the play calling. It's like, no, you've got to know that you've got a defensive end. Like, if that were Danielle Hunter out there, that might have been a better play to run if Danielle Hunter were the opposing defensive end. Because it's a veteran, savvy defensive end. And you're hoping, oh, he's going to bite on this Joe Mixon action. And that'll be enough of a delay for them to get the ball off.
Yeah.
Like, no, it's a young player that's just trying to get his first NFL sack.
Was that the play where Shaq had to come over and pull and block out Ali Gay?
Yes.
There's that, too.
Right, yeah, that was the way. It was Shaq coming across, and, like, Ali Gay was like, whatevs.
Yeah.
And Shaq didn't really look like he knew what was going on.
No,
either.
He was tippy-toeing.
Yeah.
He was tippy-toeing. Text message, is CJ injured? Seems like a lot of his passes make the receiver have to go to the ground. Why is he throwing so many ground balls hitting guys in stride?
Some of those are because he's trying to throw the safe ball that's not going to be an interception.
Correct.
And some of that comes back on the receivers where, I think like that used to be the special those first few games last year to Robert Woods.
Mm-hmm.
He'd throw it in the dirt because he felt like Robert Woods could come up with it. And it was either going to be a first down or an incompletion, but it definitely wasn't going to be an interception. I think some of those they're not dirt balls. They've generally been like at the feet of either Nico Collins or Tank Dell or whomever else, and they're not coming up with them.
Nope.
Nico had an opportunity for one of those last week, and he didn't.
Kind of coming
up with
back
it.
To the ball near the first down marker. There's third and long, I think. Yeah. No, he.
Yeah, I. The Tennessee game. This is where I would differ with Ross too. I think after the Tennessee game, I saw a few people say, and Ross said this during the broadcast. They're like, well, he's just made too many throws that are, seemed like last year he would have made them, but this year he's making them look difficult. When I went back and watched all of CJ's throws from the end zone, he actually had really good ball placement. But some of the plays like Tank Dell in that Titans game on third and long to Tank Dell over the middle, Tank should have caught that.
Put it on his hands.
Yeah.
Third and 19.
And it was under duress. CJ was getting hit from the side, if I recall
properly.
It
was a rope.
Yeah, and guys aren't coming up with it. So, but again, I don't want to put it all on the receivers. It's just when there's that many issues in that many different areas, ultimately it comes back on the coaching.
Yeah.
You've got this many guys across the board underperforming, and it's just little miscues here, mistakes there, mental error there. It all comes back on the offensive coordinator. I'm just not nearly as generous in like, oh, he dialed up a good play. No, that's 1/6 of the job.
That's right.
That's the old Bum Phillips quote. It's not what you can, it's not how smart you are. It's what you can get your guys to do.
Yep.
And that's coaching. It's a great, or the old saying, what an average plan well executed beats a perfect plan poorly executed
that's
every
right.
day. Right now, I think the Texans have a lot of great game plans poorly executed, and that's on Bobby.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. Someone says Ross Tucker sounds like Carl from Caddyshack. A little bit. Bill Murray's Caddyshack character. A little bit. Ross has that kind of like, you know, that
he's got he's
offensive lineman's voice thing.
He sounds almost like a little bit drunk, you know, which people like. It's endearing. They're like, oh, this is a big drunk guy, but he's not like hovering over me telling me about his plans for a perpetual motion machine or something.
He's got a busy schedule over the next several days. Wow.
Yeah, he said he hasn't been home for Christmas or Thanksgiving.
For a long time.
No, he wasn't asking people to cry him a river or anything. No,
It's the nature of the job, and I'm guessing, no disrespect to his family, there's part of him that really enjoys that road warrior mentality. I think he's...
You mean getting away from his in-laws?
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say that. It's implied, but I didn't say that. No, just like, I think I was like that before I got into radio. I loved going all over the country and being on the road and traveling. And there's a lot of people that don't like that. I like it a lot.
There's one thing. Well, Ross knows this too. It's sometimes when it comes to players taking personal time off for family events and everything, I'm like very old school in that. A lot of people probably hate it. I'm kind of like, a lot of guys have wives who totally get it and understand that this is a very unique and special opportunity. And especially with players. And yeah, there's a lot of financial rewards attached to it.
Yeah.
So look, if U.S. service members can spend entire years away from home and everything, yeah, as a multimillionaire, miss a couple of family events or maybe, you know, just the some of the special moments in life because it's a unique situation.
Yes.
With really, really big really big rewards attached to
big
it.
Big time, yeah. And you're not going to do it forever.
Right.
It's not going to be this way. Like a lot of people are
like,
regular
daddy
jobs.
Wasn't there for my christening or whatever. Like, no, it's just like you've got an entire off season where you get to spend as much time as you want with your kids compared to most people.
Hey, a quick reminder here. We're going to be giving away Texans tickets today. So I know next Tuesday is the Tuesday right before the next Texans home game.
Yeah.
But that's not a lot of time on Christmas Eve to be able to actually get people their tickets. So we're doing the Texans ticket Tuesday for the Ravens game on Christmas today in the 9 o'clock hour. Front row seats in the bullpen, Christmas Day. I hear there's a concert at halftime too for that.
I wonder, I guess there's probably, I wish I knew like what the most favorite songs that people want to see are or anything. It's not quite our purview.
No, yeah. Text in.
Don't worry, we're not going to talk about it.
713-572-4610.
No, we won't read any of your texts.
I'm curious. A text for my own curiosity.
Which Beyonce song do you want to hear?
All of them. Yeah.
Okay,
all
gotcha.
Of them. 713-572-4610. As long as we're talking about the offense, here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday. How do you think the offense played as a whole on Sunday?
As a whole, I think our offense, we did some good things. We got points. We put the ball in the end zone. We got points. Moved the ball downfield. Put ourselves up to, you know, kick field goals. And, you know, we want to definitely, overall, there are always things to improve upon, right? Eliminating the negative plays. Don't like to see the negative plays there for us where we're going backwards. Like, just want to see more positive plays, gaining positive yardage. But, you know, get the ball in the end zone, play complimentary football. It was enough for us to win.
Some of the talk of the offense since this game from D'Amico and from people in the locker room, from CJ, they know.
Like, right.
They know the tone better be 180 degrees difference in the building this week about that offensive performance than what they're dishing out in these press conferences.
I was kind of enjoying... Well, I mean, in that press conference, it wasn't like he was positive about it at that point. I heard that as like, he's like, we did enough to win the game. And we can't have all these negative... I didn't think that was very like actual praise at all.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't read it that way. That felt like a guy that was trying to... Yeah, he's not going to like publicly lambaste him or anything.
Yeah, that's,
but man, that, well, that this ain't
kinda,
it. This ain't
and
it.
And that's kind of what I'm saying. Yeah. He's trying to remain... You know, he's trying to highlight the good things that they did. I'm like, there better be, dude. They generated 140 yards of offense. I'm taking the fake punt out. They don't get with the quarterback on the field.
Yeah,
they generated 140 yards of offense against a defense that it ain't Pittsburgh's defense.
It's, you go back,
and you're at home.
You go back to the Lions game. It was you've got a plus +4 turnover margin. Yeah. How are you only scoring 20 points?
Correct.
That's not acceptable. It's not championship caliber offense.
And that's my point. I'm not saying D'Amico's heaping praise on the
offense.
Well,
but I get it down. Like, I don't worry. They know that they've got issues.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't. You get into this point in the season, though, too. Like, what, you can't get up every week and just hammer them down into submission and tell them how crappy they are and everything. You got to try to build on some of the progress you've made.
Right.
But they're very aware that this is not acceptable. I don't think there's anybody in that building that thinks like, we're really cooking with gas now.
No, I get it. I get it. How would you grade the offensive line in that game on Sunday?
I don't know. Boy, is it a sliding scale, or is there a based on? I mean, a C, I guess.
A C.
They still can't run the ball,
right?
It wasn't like the Dolphins. The Dolphins are a solid defense, but
and I think that is indicative that you're giving them a C. And I thought the same thing, C. Yeah. And then you take a step back and go, they literally can't run the football,
right?
For an offensive line and an offense that we said in the preseason and pointed out multiple times. You pointed out a lot. They don't have a genuinely good run game yet.
Yeah.
You know, like that's Bobby Slowik. I wouldn't hire him as a head coach until he proves he can get a genuinely good run game. They don't have a genuinely good run game. They've got Joe Mixon putting a cape on once every other game, seven times this year. But there rarely has this been a running offense that looks like you could plug somebody else in other than Joe Mixon and move the football.
And honestly, I'm not like this one element, I think. Right now, look, the way the team approached the offseason with the defense and everything else, I think it's been slam dunk. It's looked great. Obviously, the interior offensive line should have been addressed more aggressively. And then I'm looking at Damian Pierce's stats. Damian Pierce had 7 snaps in the game the other day. He hasn't had a carry since the Cowboys game.
Were they on offense or were they on special teams?
No, 7 on offense.
Okay.
I don't know if some of those were on. No, there were 7 on offense.
Because I know he's a kick returner also. Yeah.
And he's had 15 carries on the season. And that was the one thing. And again, I'm not.
Hold up, stop. Their backup running back has had 15 carries on the season.
And remember, Sean, all training camp long, I'm trying to figure out.
Like 10 of them were in the Patriots game.
I kept saying this can't be their plan. Like, Damian can't be the second string running back. And people were telling me, like, you're an idiot, you're a hater. I'm like, no, I love Damian Pierce, but it's clearly not working out. I could see it in practice.
Right.
I could see it in practice.
Yeah.
And the games, there were excuses because they had a disheveled offensive line because they were treating the offensive line like these guys are all Hall of Famers or something that didn't need to play preseason games. Oh, they don't need the reps. Everything will be fine. Whatever. Yeah. If Joe Mixon goes down, it's over.
Over. Dude, you and
100% over.
You and I were sitting next to each other when Mixon went down after that hip drop tackle, and I think we were both terrified.
Yeah. I'm still honestly in shock that they genuinely believe that Damian Pierce was the backup running back. Yeah. I really, though, the entire time I thought, well, maybe we'll see, and maybe they're trying to trade him or something, but like they seem like they were genuinely devoted to him, and yet again for a second straight year, I guess they just didn't realize what was plainly in front of them, that no, this is not. This system or whatever is not working out for Damian Pierce.
Text message. Pierce is in the doghouse, or they simply don't believe in him.
Doghouse my ass.
No, he's the opposite.
I love that doghouse.
He's the opposite.
Can somebody give me a doghouse where I make $500,000 a year to not do much?
That he's on the team would indicate he's not in the doghouse. Yeah.
He's got... Now, he does average 6.7 yards per attempt because of that one long run in the Patriots game. Yeah,
that's true. 15 carries. I hadn't seen that.
You texted
me his game log the other day, and I just looked and saw how minuscule the numbers were on there, and that's very frustrating. Your backup running back has 15 carries, and he's been on the team all year
long.
And
again, I'm not overall lambasting Caserio for that or anything. I mean, look, his work with the defensive backs and the guys he's brought on this team, he's done a very good job. So not every GM makes every move the right move, obviously. But the interior offensive line being the shambles that it is, and the fact that Joe Mixon is the only running back on the team that you feel good about, that's scary going into
that's problematic. I mean, there's a few positions on this team where they're one hit away from having to really shuffle here and cobble things together.
Yeah, and then the part of it too is, it's not so easy to just go out and get a running back either.
Yes.
I know it's easy. I say they're a dime a dozen, but they're not, obviously.
Yeah. Well, and this is one of those things where you go, okay, they're probably ahead of schedule on the rebuild. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're probably ahead of, we had these Super Bowl expectations at the beginning of the year. The fact of the matter is, once Nick was able to clean up the Bill O'Brien mess, that took a year or two. And then you get DeMeco in here, and they're probably ahead of where people expected them to be when DeMeco Ryans got here.
If you're you look at the Lions, because they're a couple years ahead in terms of when the head coach was hired.
Yeah.
And all right, Montgomery's out, but at least you got Jahmyr Gibbs. The Texans aren't at that point yet.
That's a great point. Montgomery, if you haven't heard, David Montgomery, the Lions running back, is out for the year. Right. Now they're going to lean on Jahmyr Gibbs a lot more.
Yeah.
713-572-4610. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Tuesday. One move that they did get right, that Nick did get right, was drafting Derek Stingley Jr. with the third pick. Can we put the sauce versus Sting debate to bed? And I've got audio from the postgame show with Derek Stingley. Maybe the most underrated thing that's impressive about Derek Stingley Jr. You're going to hear it coming up.
Hey, it's Mark Schler, the Stinky Truth Podcast. The NFL playoffs are here, and I'll be breaking down every matchup as we get toward the big game. Join my co-host Mike Evans and I on the Stinky Truth Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.